Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Organizing Amazon in New York without the backing from a major union. That's right. I'll explain in a few minutes. Labor mobilizing support for Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. And today on the show, it's LIUNA Local 81 out of Northern Indiana and the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. Welcome to the Monday, March 28th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on a number of platforms and growing, just to name a few: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. Corey Campbell is going to be our first guest on the show today. He comes to us from Laborers Local 81. This is part of the LIUNA group, Laborers International Union of North America, presenting sponsor of the show. We've been going around the country checking in with various locals. And today, 81 is out of Northern Indiana. A little background on Corey. He says, I joined the local in March of 2010 as a construction craft apprentice, and I completed the four-year apprenticeship program in a little over 2 years. We'll talk about that. I worked most of my field career at ArcelorMittal, now known as Cleveland Cliffs. That was in Burns Harbor, Indiana, for one of our industrial contractors performing refractory maintenance and other industrial maintenance within the steel mill. During my apprenticeship, I learned the ins and outs of the job. Once graduated from apprenticeship, moved up the position to labor's foreman for the company, serving that role for 3 years. Then in October 2015, I was appointed by our local union business manager as union organizer. He served that position up until November of 2019. Then he moved up to his current position, which is vice president and field rep. So we'll talk about moving up the ladder. We'll talk about apprenticeship membership, how he's able to do it in half the time. The infrastructure bill, that's a biggie, what that means for the state of Indiana, and the current scale of large construction jobs in Northwest Indiana. And I'm hearing good news from various parts of the country, so I'm excited to hear what Corey has to say as our first guest. Later in the show, one of our regulars will be joining us. That would be Greg Regan on behalf of the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. TTD.org is their website. And he's been busy. On March 15th, just a couple of weeks ago, Greg testified in a Senate hearing on the transit wins that were incorporated in the bipartisan infrastructure bill. We'll touch on that. In fact, if you go to the TTD website, you can hear Greg testifying at that Senate hearing. They post a lot of stuff on their website, and they're very, very current on stuff like that. March 9th, going back a little further into the month, more than 20 transportation unions sent a letter to the Department of Transportation and the Federal Transit Administration urging immediate action to protect transit workers from assaults. The assaults against transit workers have been a concern for many, many years, but they exploded during the pandemic. And I mean, a lot of people were frustrated. They didn't want to wear their masks, and they took it out on either a bus driver or a subway driver or the stewardesses, the flight attendants. Actually, I stand corrected there. They don't call them stewardesses anymore. I'm showing my age. In some cases, the pilots, they try to get into the cockpit. So we'll touch on that. And it seems like Congress is slow to react on what they can do. I know there's severe penalties, especially for the airlines, but many of those penalties are just not being doled out. The other issue, nearly 3 years into the pandemic, U.S. maritime workers are still waiting on COVID relief. And Congress is the problem here. A couple of weeks ago, this would be on March 16th, the House Education and Labor Committee approved a bill to provide COVID workers' compensation relief to longshoremen and other U.S. maritime workers. Between April of 2020, so this is right before the shutdowns of 2 years ago, between that time and October of last year, workers submitted almost 1,100 longshore COVID workers' comp claims to the Department of Labor. However, employers paid out benefits in only 73 cases. Got it? Almost 1,100 claims, 73 taken care of. You do the math on that, that's 7% of cases. They disputed 93% of them. Yet, from the East Coast to the West Coast, longshore workers and other on-dock workers work in close quarters where you're exposed to the virus. It's not only possible, says Greg, but very likely. And during the pandemic, they've witnessed outbreaks that have hamstrung or nearly shut down some of the busiest ports. So something's got to be done. And keep in mind, the port workers, these are the people that are in the middle of our supply chain. They're moving goods from one shipping vessel onto trucks and trains. That's part of the problem right now, why people aren't getting what they ordered. Get this figure. More than 95% of our overseas trade flows through one of about 150 deep water ports in the nation. And nearly 3 years into the pandemic, a lot of these workers are still waiting for a COVID relief. Crazy. Just crazy. So Greg Regan has a whole lot to talk about here. While we're talking about transit, got to give a shout out here to the Amalgamated Transit Union. They announced a donation of $25,000 to the International Trade Union Confederation Relief Fund. And this is to provide immediate support to Ukrainian refugees. The fund is helping the Ukrainian labor organizations and providing basic needs for the growing number of refugees. John Costa, we've had him on the show a number of times. He's a president of the ATU. He said, "We are beyond inspired by the strength and courage of the Ukrainian people bravely defending their country in this war with Russia. Many civilians, Ukrainian civilians, have tragically lost their lives. Families have been torn apart and forced to flee their homes amid the destruction and violence of the war. And we are hopeful that this donation for the millions of refugees will help those most in need of care." Yeah, unions are pretty strong, especially in Europe and Ukraine. So it's only appropriate. Hey, that's what unions do. They come together. Tommy Buffenbarger talked a lot about this on our show with him on Thursday of last week. All right, let's talk about Amazon. This is quite interesting. Workers' organizing efforts at Amazon have continued in Staten Island, New York, in an effort to become the first group of Amazon employees to unionize in the United States. The Staten Island organizing effort does not have the backing from a major union, which is by design. The organizers say they believe this choice of strategy will enhance their credibility and win support from workers. That's their game plan. So this is one to watch, because when a major union comes in, all of a sudden, you know, the corporate types like Amazon, they have their strategy lined up. This is a little bit different. From March 25th, which was Friday, until the 30th, which will be the end of this week, Wednesday, one vote will take place at Amazon's JFK 8 warehouse, which employs about 7,500 people. Now, next month, week of April 25th, Workers at LDJ5, weird names for these warehouses, LDJ5, which is another warehouse in Staten Island, will also hold their votes. Now, in a statement, Amazon said it prefers to negotiate with workers individually. Of course they do. And they already provide what organizers have asked for, and they want to work directly with their team to continue making Amazon a great place to work. That's what they said. Now, the organizers, for their part, are looking to improve their pay and working conditions, especially since the e-commerce giant pressured its employees to meet a record-breaking number of orders during the pandemic. Chris Smalls, former Amazon employee who is now leading this union effort, said, quote, "We hope to be like the Starbucks movement and branch out across the nation." Now, Amazon fired him for what Smalls describes as retaliation for his attempt to organize workers. Amazon claims that he violated COVID-19 safety protocols. So Smalls' union organizing group has been entirely funded through donations. The Amazon Labor Union, as they call it, so far has raised more than $100,000, which, I mean, it sounds like a lot, but it's really not when you're going against a multi-billion dollar company. Nonetheless, we're talking grassroots here. The organizers are remaining positive in their outlook. Smalls noted, "We've had plenty of small victories along the way. We want to apply pressure and can still make more changes. We want to put workers in the driver's seat." We'll see what happens here. So one vote will be ending in just a couple of days. One more here, and this is a support for Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. You might have seen the Senate hearings last week, and some of the questions are absolutely off the charts, but I'm not going to get into that. Comment here from the AFL-CIO: "We have the opportunity to ensure a highly qualified judge is appointed to the highest court in America. Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, President Biden's nominee for the U.S. Supreme Court, will break down barriers and protect the fundamental rights of all American workers. And with these hearings, our voices must be heard in this crucial democratic process." The AFL-CIO has created three easy ways for our members to tell their senators to vote for Judge Jackson. Together, the labor movement can make her confirmation a reality. So we need to mobilize our members. And there's three ways you can do it. Make a call, send a letter, sign a petition. You can do all of this by going to AFLCIO.org, AFLCIO.org. All right, quick break. When we come back, LIUNA Local 81 out of Northern Indiana.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter, which would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation. Before we get to Corey Campbell, want to do a shout out here in support of our union brothers and sisters, the steelworkers. This would be Local 14919. They've been on strike since February 5th. And it's an unfair labor practice strike against Sherwin-Williams at the company's facility in Bedford Heights, Ohio. We've talked about this on the show a couple of times. On Friday of last week, the steelworkers members, union leaders, and retirees, and all supporters of the members there rallied with our very own Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio in support of their struggle for a fair contract. Again, it's been going on since the beginning of February. No progress, but once again, I always say elections matter. You get the right people in office like Sherrod Brown, and here's a good example of somebody supporting workers right on the picket line. So hats off to Senator Brown. We always check in with him on the first Thursday of each and every month, so look forward to talking to him about that. Right now, let's go to Northern Indiana joining us. In fact, he's headed for a picket line. That would be Corey Campbell. Corey is a vice president and field rep with LIUNA Local 81, labors81.org. Corey Campbell, welcome to the show. How are we doing today, my brother?
I'm doing good, Flash. How about yourself?
Good. Talk to me. Now, what's going on? You're on your way to a picket line over there. Give me some details on that.
Yep, we're actually on our way to a picket line right now ourselves, Flash, and we have a bell tire going up pretty much across the street from our union hall. Bell tire came in. They did pretty much the whole job union. They did the site work union, the concrete union. Now they have this mason company coming in. Sounds like they travel all over with these bell tires doing, you know, the mason work for these bell tires. The store's going up, and, you know, they came in here and have no interest in signing a contract or hiring union guys. So we're going to go out and do our thing and throw up a picket line with the Bricklayers Local 4 this morning.
There you go. Good for you. So everything is union except for the block, the cinder block, I take it, that they're putting up. I don't get that part. I mean, like 99% of it is union, but they decided not to go that route. And this is, you're saying, pretty typical for Bell Tire?
Hey, that's what it's sounding like. We've had another Bell Tire go up in another location in our jurisdiction. Now, that job went completely union. I mean, from the ground up, 100% union. Now this one, you know, they come in and they bring this non-union mason company, and you know, they think we'd be satisfied with that, and obviously, you know, we're not okay with that, and you know, we want as many union jobs as possible, and so, you know, it was kind of a black eye on us, especially being so close to our union hall. So we're gonna go out and do our things with our members this morning.
Now, when you say it's close to your union hall, how far are we talking about here, Corey?
Not even a half mile.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, I'm sure it wasn't too hard to get people over there then.
No, not at all. Nope. We got to look at it every day, you know, driving to the union hall. So, you know, we're not going to just sit here and do nothing about it.
I hear you, brother. All right. Let's talk about yourself. I was reading your bio a few minutes ago, and what I thought was kind of interesting here is the speed in which you went through the apprenticeship program. And we're talking a 4-year apprenticeship, and you did it in a little over 2 years. You got to talk to me about that. What's going on there, Corey?
Yes, sir. So fortunately enough, you know, work was good when I got in. So, you know, the 4,000 on the job hours for your apprenticeship, that went pretty quickly, and I was able to get that easily. You know, I was fortunate enough, our apprenticeship program, they will credit you a certain amount of hours if you're either a college student or doing any kind of, you know, vocational training or anything like that. So I was actually a volunteer fireman as well for 5 years right out of high school, was going through EMT school. So, you know, they were gracious enough to grant me almost about half of my class time hours, which total hours for the apprenticeship is 432 hours. in the state of Indiana for construction craft apprentice for the laborers. So, you know, I was able to get, you know, about half of my class time actually credited for, you know, the schooling I was going through for EMT and the fire department. So, you know, with that, and then, you know, I went down, did a few classes and was able to get, you know, finished a little over 2 years.
And I see you did a lot at ArcelorMittal, which is now Cleveland Cliffs. This was in Burns Harbor, Indiana. You want to talk to us about that part?
Yeah. So, you know, that was a great experience. And, you know, fortunately for us, you know, we have two ginormous steel mills right in our jurisdiction. We have U.S. Steel Gary Works and the old ArcelorMittal, which is now Cleveland Cliffs. We have guys out there, you know, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, you know, just doing regular refractory maintenance out there, working on all the slab furnaces, blast furnaces, coke batteries, pickle lines, so on and so forth. In every, you know, spot of the mill out there, just doing, you know, regular maintenance. And I was actually brought on with a company out there, which was Kverner NAC at the time when I started, which changed to Matrix. And, you know, I stayed on out there, went out there as an apprentice, and, you know, they took a liking to me, moved up, you know, as a foreman out there, was running a crew after I got done with my apprenticeship. And, you know, that's where I spent most of my time before I took on the position of organizer with the union hall.
Yeah, I see. That was like in 2015. Now with organizing, let's talk a little bit about that, because I know Indiana is a right to work state. How difficult has it been? And I know your workload has been increasing here, but as far as organizing, can we get into that, Corey?
Yes, sir. So, yeah, I mean, you brought up a good point there, Flash. We are a right-to-work state, have been a right-to-work state for going on 10 years now. Fortunately for us, I mean, we've seen a little bit of the effect of right-to-work. But, you know, we've been able to stay on top of it. We have great leadership down at our district council with David Fry, the business manager. You know, collaborative effort between all the locals here in the state of Indiana. We've been able to stay on top of it. And, you know, being a right-to-work state, luckily enough for us, it really hasn't affected us wholeheartedly up here in northwest Indiana, at least. Now, a little bit, you know, southern Indiana, they've dealt with it a little bit more. But, you know, luckily for us, Flash, you know, we really, really haven't been affected too badly by it.
Now, you mentioned the Cleveland Cliffs, which is formerly ArcelorMittal. It sounds like, and I know the steelworkers are cranking right now. You know, we've got this pandemic going. We've got supply chain issues and all that. But it sounds to me that a lot of your members are tied into that right now. Am I hearing that correctly, Corey?
That's correct. Yeah, we have quite a few of our members that work out there with multiple different companies that, you know, they pretty much make a career out there, Flash. You know, they don't do anything other than industrial work. And then, you know, like I said, they start out there as a young, brand new guy. And then, you know, they could retire out there. And, you know, that's very fortunate for us to, you know, be able to have the amount of man hours we have out there that keeps us going. And maybe when the outside's a little bit slower, you know, guys are able to go inside the mill and, you know, get 2-3 days a week out there, hit a couple outages and, you know, make ends meet. So, you know, having those steel mills in our area, we are extremely fortunate.
We're speaking with Corey Campbell, and Corey is with Labor's 81, LIUNA 81. He's a vice president field rep. How many members in 81 right now, Corey?
The last per capita count we had 1,164 members. And, you know, with that being said, Flash, you know, that's a great point to bring up. Last year, this time last year, we had just a little over 60 apprentices. By the end of last year, we had, it just took us over the 100 apprentice mark. And then we just closed our application process actually this past Friday. And we're looking to take about another 70 to 100 apprentices. So we're currently doing interviews as well. Our membership's growing. The workload's there. We had full employment from May of last year till the beginning of December. All our guys were working. Our out-of-work list, we only seen about, I think the high was 68 members, you know, at peak time for, you know, guys out of work, which is, you know, extremely rare for, you know, the winter time. And, mm-hmm. You know, work's been very, very well in our area.
Boy, that's great. So you had 60 apprentices, then you went to 100, and then you added 70 to 100 more. That's how are you doing that? Are you going into the schools here? What, how are you accomplishing that right now?
Yep. So we're we're trying our hardest. We're hitting all the job fairs in our area, trying to get in every school that that will allow us. Try to promote the unions, and maybe the kids that they don't want to do the 4-year college thing, they might not be interested in school. Trying to explain to them, hey, you know, there's another career path other than going to college for 4 years. You can join a union. Get paid to learn, and come out with a 4-year apprenticeship and have a career ahead of you that is family sustaining, great benefits, and a great livelihood.
Yeah, yeah. What about national? Terry O'Sullivan, great guy, big supporter of this show, America's Workforce, and longtime supporter, I might add. Are you getting help from national when it comes to organizing? In the next segment, I want to talk about the infrastructure bill. That's just going to open up so many opportunities. But what's your relationship with national as far as communicating with them?
Oh, National helps us out a lot. Terry O'Sullivan, he's the best general president out of the whole labor movement. I might be a little biased with saying that, but, just hearing that man speak, you can hear the passion in his voice, the passion for the labor movement, and, it just trickles down all the way from the top. We're only as good as our leaders and our members. It's a team effort, and I think everybody, working collaboratively, it's making this thing work and certainly getting all the help that we need from the international.
There's three words I love from Terry every time I have him on the show. Feel the power. Feel the power. Sounds like you're feeling the power over there in Northern Indiana. Is that what I'm feeling?
100%, Flash. Feeling the power, baby.
Corey, hang with us. Corey Campbell joining us on our live line. He is Vice President Field Rep for Labor's Local 81, labors81.org. We'll continue talking to him, especially get into that infrastructure bill, because that's going to open up all kind of job opportunities. Later in the show, Greg Regan, on behalf of the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans. And we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers. And we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And there's a number of platforms you can check us out. I've been mentioning six of them. There are more. It's Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, all you got to do is sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always like those 5-star ratings, so keep them coming. Let's go back to Northern Indiana. Corey Campbell joining us. In fact, if you're just checking in with us now, he's on his way to a picket line. Bell Tire, They go 99% union on all the construction there, and this is new construction. And when it comes to the block, the cinder block that they're putting up, they're going non-union. So he's getting his brothers and sisters from Labor's 81 on the picket line. They have about 1,164 members. Corey, I want to talk to you about the infrastructure bill, and congratulations on attracting all those apprentices. That's amazing what you're doing over there. Obviously, they see what's happening in America with this infrastructure bill. Now, I don't know what's happened there. Maybe you can fill me in on your territory there in northern Indiana. What are you hearing about what's going to happen here with all that money? Go ahead.
So, Flash, you know, the infrastructure bill, hats off to the Biden administration, you know, for getting this deal passed. You know, it's a multi-generational bill that, you know, union members are going to benefit for, you know, at least a couple generations. So what we're hearing for, you know, the state of Indiana, which is all good things, we're expecting to get about $8.8 billion of that $1.3 trillion infrastructure bill. And, you know, just a little breakdown of what Indiana's expecting to get from that $8.8 billion and where it's going. You know, again, these are just rough numbers and just an estimate. You know, they got to, you know, go through the proper channels and see where everything lies afterwards. But out of that $8.8 billion, Flash, Indiana, there are 1,111 bridges and over 5,478 miles of highway in poor condition. Indiana is expecting to receive $6.6 billion for federal aid highway programs and $401 million for bridge replacement and repairs. Along with that, Indiana is also expecting to receive nearly $680 million over 5 years to improve public transportation options across the state. We're also expecting to receive $100 million over 5 years in the support of the expansion of the EV charging networks in the state. Also, Indiana will have the opportunity to apply for $2.5 billion in grant funding dedicated to EV charging as well in that bill. Indiana is also expecting to receive $100 million to help provide for broadband coverage across the state. Indiana is also expecting to receive $20 million over 5 years to protect against wildfires and $20 million to protect against cyber attacks. Indiana is also expecting to receive $751 million over 5 years to improve water infrastructure across the state. And lastly, Indiana is expecting to receive $170 million in the development for airports over 5 years, too. So all that's included in that $8.8 billion, and, you know, all that's jobs.
Yeah.
And that's good union jobs for generations to come. So, you know, that's all great things and, you know, stuff to look forward to for the next, you know, couple generations in the state of Indiana.
Yeah, they worked in the worker protections on this legislation. So we're talking prevailing wage, and that's so darn important when it comes to the construction. I bet you you've got a couple of stories about prevailing wage over the years, don't you?
Yeah, we certainly do. And, you know, we have one job going on right now, Flash. It's a double track project, which is it's our transportation commuter district. It's Northern Indiana Commuter Transportation District. It's needless to say, it's the trains that run from South Bend, Indiana, all the way through Chicago. They're putting in a whole brand new second track to try to mainstream and fast track these, you know, the commuters from South Bend to Chicago, you know, cut down their time in about half. And we have a prevailing wage project going on, Davis-Bacon project, which we currently had some impasses with the contractor doing that. And, you know, we kind of took that all the way up to the Department of Labor, Davis, the wage and hour division, to try to get a clarification on that. But, you know, that was I learned a lot of new things through that battle.
It's nice having Marty Walsh in that department, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Shout out to Marty Walsh, too. You know, being a card-carrying LIUNA member himself out of 223, you know, that's great. And, you know, that makes everybody in LIUNA very, very proud to have one of our own in, you know, in a spot like that.
You're not kidding. You're not kidding. I want to get back to that infrastructure bill. And, you know, in Indiana, and we record this show at Ironworkers Local 17 in Cleveland, Ohio, you get the same same weather pretty much that we get. And I can only assume when you mentioned the roads and the bridges there, it's kind of, you know, winter takes its toll. Let's be honest. You got freeze and thaw and all that. The conditions of the roads. Can you speak to that for our listeners? Maybe you could paint a picture on how bad they are. And, you know, we saw that bridge collapse in Pittsburgh not too long ago. And if you go back 10, 12 years, there was, I believe it was the I-35 up in Minnesota. So what's your territory like right now, Corey?
Well, especially this time of year, Flash, I mean, just as well as you guys know, you know, the potholes are, you know, crazy. They're miniature craters popping up this time of year. You know, the weather starts breaking a little bit. It starts, you know, getting warmer and the potholes start popping up like crazy. You know, the weather's certainly hard on, you know, the roads and the bridges in our area. They definitely take a beating over the winter months, you know, with the snow plows and, you know, the expanding and contrasting of the roads and stuff like that. So, I mean, the roads definitely take a beating in our area, and especially this time of year, you know, you're swerving and miss potholes that, you know, pretty much could eat your car.
Yeah, I hear you. Sometimes the whole car disappears in some of those potholes. So, yeah,
you ain't kidding.
That money is long overdue. And I know the states, some of the states have picked up the ball and ran with it, but you still need federal money in order to do it right. And it's thankfully that has finally happened. And that money is starting to trickle. I know there's a lot of criteria they have to work on. I have to ask you, you know, you mentioned in the first segment about the apprenticeship programs, how they've been growing. Corey, in your estimation, with all the projects that are going to come to fruition with this infrastructure bill, do you think we have enough in the pipeline right now in the apprentices? What do you think?
I know we've been scarce. You know, I was kind of surprised, really, to be honest with you, Flash, the overwhelming amount of applications that we actually had filed in our, you know, the 2-week time that we had our apprenticeship applications open for. You know, it was reassuring. But, you know, I know other crafts and, you know, other companies and stuff like that, they've all been having issues with, you know, getting enough manpower and employees signed on for, you know, the amount of work. Fortunately for us right now, you know, we were lucky enough to have so many applicants in during this process. And, you know, if work keeps going this way and, you know, the uptick in work keeps going on, hopefully the amount of apprentices are there. Right now, I don't see that being an issue for us, you know, with being over 200 applicants and only taking 70 to 100. But I certainly hope that, you know, we can have enough manpower to fulfill all the jobs and, you know, all the work that's going to be coming with the infrastructure bill.
Corey, your membership now, you indicated was 1164, 1,164. With all these apprenticeship programs, with the workload, where do you see that in maybe 1, 2, 3, 5 years? I don't know if your union is projected out on that. You're doing a great job, it seems like, with organizing. What's your gut telling you?
Well, I'm hoping, you know, that just a ballpark, throwing a number out there with the apprentices that we're taking this year, and hopefully, you know, be taking more next year. You know, I'm looking, hopefully, with, you know, taking 100, you know, we'll be at, you know, 1,264 then. But hopefully, you know, we can get up to close to 1,300 members. That'd be ideal within the next couple years.
That's
as long
good.
As work
yeah.
stays the way it's going.
Yeah, I know National is like a 500,000 strong, and that number has been increasing across the country. So it's good to hear. Things sounds pretty good in Local 81. Corey Campbell, he's Vice President Field Rep of LIUNA Local 81. The website is labors81.org, part of the LIUNA family. Corey, I love your energy. I love what you're saying. Any parting words here for our audience?
Feel the power.
All right, brother.
I appreciate everything you guys do, too. You know, getting the word out, promoting unions. You guys are doing a great job as well. Started listening to you guys a couple weeks ago, and you guys are doing great work.
Well, spread the message to your members, okay? We're on at least six platforms now, and we want to get the message to all our brothers and sisters. So you take care and stay strong and feel the power, okay?
All right, feel the power, Flash. Have a good day.
All right, quick break. When we come back, Greg Regan on behalf of the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Ironworkers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 ironworkers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union ironworkers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our ironworkers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And of course, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to Washington right now. Joining us on our live line, as he does each and every month, is Greg Regan, who's president of the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO, and that is TTD. .org. And I'll tell you, lots of information on there, including Greg's testimony before the Senate at a hearing on transit labor wins. Let's start off with some labor wins for a change. Hey, Greg, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today?
Hi, I'm good, Flash. How are you?
Good. I'm good. Well, let's get into it here. This was just a couple of weeks ago at a Senate hearing. What did you tell them? What was discussed here?
I think it's important to remind everybody that we had some pretty big wins this year when it comes to transportation policy and pro-worker policy. In the transit sector in particular, I mean, we had the biggest investments in the history of transit with the infrastructure bill that was passed earlier this year. And we haven't even started to see the benefits of that, but it's coming soon. But the other part of that was we had some major wins in terms of policy, not just money, but policy. So we have really important language in there that's going to protect people from being assaulted, which to me seems like common sense, but took a lot of effort to get in there. So we got a lot to celebrate.
Well, how was the reception there at that Senate hearing? I mean, was it pretty cordial? Were some people saying, wait a minute, you've gone too far? Just kind of curious about that.
It was really good. You know, let's be honest. This is Sherrod Brown is the chair of this committee. And I think, he's a big friend of labor. Chris Van Hollen was from Maryland. He's on that committee, and he's the author of the bill that was originally this language on preventing assaults. And so he was good. I mean, And the other thing is that only one Republican showed up. We had a bunch of Democrats, only one Republican. So I guess it shows you where the priorities were in terms of transit for them.
See, I had to ask you that question because after watching the hearings with Ketanji Brown Jackson last week, you know, I don't know. I don't know about some of these people, but I'm glad you answered it that way. So
it shows you where they are. Like they didn't. We're talking about oversight of transit funding in from a major piece of legislation, and the only person that showed up was Pat Toomey, and that was it. No other Republican.
Okay. Good, good, good. So a lot of policy changes there. Good for workers. We want to hear that kind of thing. All right. You mentioned the assaults, and I'm wondering, where are we with that? Because the assaults, first of all, let's be clear. They've been going on a long time, a very long time. You've got unruly passengers. They drink too much on airplanes, buses. We know the story there. But when you have the pandemic, I mean, we're in our third year of the pandemic. They just skyrocketed. In your opinion, are we making any progress on this, Greg?
Although it's not as visible as I'd like it to be, the language that we got passed into the bill, into the infrastructure law earlier this year, I think will make a real difference. You know, the fact that we're talking about getting workers involved with the safety planning process, getting real data on assaults in this country, all that stuff is going to make a difference. It just needs to be implemented. I spoke with the Federal Transit Administration, the administrator, 2 weeks ago about this, actually. And we let her know that we're not happy with the fact that this isn't already implemented. And she was, I thought, very on the ball. I mean, she was like, look, this is a major rulemaking process. We need to make sure that all of our T's are crossed and our I's are dotted. And we can't have this. This cannot be something that's easily picked apart by the other side. So they're making progress. I feel very confident that this is going to get done very soon. And hopefully we'll start to see a real change here.
We need it. We definitely are the fines, especially on the airlines. I think they're like $35,000. Are the fines high enough? And are they actually fining the people, in your knowledge? I mean, are they making these people pay for their craziness on these planes?
I don't know that the fines are necessarily the issue. I mean, we've dealt with this in terms of whether it's federal crimes or, you know, regional, local crimes. I don't think anybody, if you're in a rage to the point that you're going to assault a fellow human being or somebody who's operating a bus, you may not be thinking about whether or not you're violating a federal crime at the moment. I mean, I just don't think one of the things one of the things that's crossing your mind. The fines are high enough, but I don't think the fines are the issue. I mean, we have people who, there's a poor man in Florida who, I mean, he had his throat slit while he was driving a bus. He managed to pull over and save all the people that were on the bus, and then he bled out and died right there. I mean, I don't know what's going on with people right now, but this is something that happens routinely, and people are dying. And, we need to, thankfully, what we have in that legislation is a holistic approach to it to try to address it in a way that looks at your workspace, it looks at your criminal penalties, it looks at all sorts of things to solve this problem.
So the guy had his throat slit while he's driving the bus, and he continued to drive the bus so the passengers would be safe, and then he dies. Did they catch the guy in that case?
Yes, they did.
God, unbelievable.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
It is. It's ridiculous. All right, let's get into the maritime workers here, and this has to do with COVID relief, and it's my understanding that there's, a proposal in Congress, but it's stalled. Can you tell us what's going on here, Greg?
Yeah, it's more than just a proposal. This is, we're trying to pass it for the fourth time in the House. It just hasn't been able to clear the Senate yet. Longshore workers, I know that a lot of people don't recognize where all their goods come from all the time, but, you know, we wouldn't have most of the stuff off of our store shelves without the work of the longshoremen and women who went to work during every single day of this pandemic and oftentimes work in very tight quarters. And a lot of them got sick during the pandemic, especially in the early days when we didn't have vaccines, we didn't have proper PPE and other things, and some of them unfortunately died. And so, despite the fact that they were people who were required to go to work, and there was everything else was closed, so realistically, the only place they got COVID would have been at work. It is very difficult to prove so, and so they were not able to get workers' compensation for their when they got sick. And you know, many states, I think close to 20 states, and the federal government for their own employees have changed the burden of proof for where you got COVID in order to qualify for workers' compensation. The longshoremen need a change in law in order to do that because it's issued by the Department of Labor. And so we'd like to make that change to make sure that they are actually entitled to the benefits they've, frankly, in my opinion, have earned.
So it sounds to me they got to jump through hoops right now in order to show that they got sick at work. Is that the story then?
Yeah. I mean, look, and if you think about it, proving where you got sick, that's difficult. How are you supposed to do that? Proving where exactly you got sick. And under the normal, you know, the normal rules, that would be a tricky thing to do. But when we're in the middle of a once in a 100-year pandemic, and, you know, you can only... You're basically locked down except for when you go to work because you're responsible for making sure that we have goods leaving and coming into the country. Yeah, I think it's worth sort of lowering the bar a little bit and granting that it's probably likely that the only place you went with other people, which is work, was where you got it.
I'm looking at these numbers. I talked about this at the beginning of the show. Between April of 2020 and October of last year, workers submitted 1,093, almost 1,100 longshore COVID workers' comp claims to the Department of Labor. However, employers paid out benefits in only 73 cases, which is actually 7% of the cases, 93% of the claims, 93%. So this legislation would rectify that problem right now? Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, okay. No, it would do what we've done in 20 states and in the federal government, which is lower that burden of proof so that people, you know, hey, if you were an essential worker who was going to work every day during the peak of the pandemic and are continuing to, and you get COVID, and in some cases people have died, in other cases they had, you know, long-term ramifications from the illness, that we are going to just give you the benefit of the doubt that you got it at work and give you the benefits that you've earned.
Amazing. So four times now this has been introduced, but just hasn't gotten anywhere. Greg, we got a couple of minutes left here. I got to ask you about this, the railway, BNSF, which is owned by Warren Buffett, one of the richest people on the planet. And I know they're at an impasse right now because of the that's the system. That's the Federal Railway Labor Act. And they're just not getting anywhere. This is a crazy situation where the workers get docked. If you get sick, I mean, people get sick while they're working, and there's like a point system. And if you accumulate so many points over a certain amount of time, you can lose your job. This is the policy that they've been working with for quite some time, and they're trying to change it, right?
Yeah, no, this they implemented this earlier this year. It's really shocking. It's so upsetting that in the middle of a pandemic, you would penalize somebody for missing work because they're legitimately sick. And you know, the way they're calculating all this stuff, and you can earn points back. You can get points back by working 14 days in a row. There you get a bonus point.
Oh my God.
Which is, and this is an industry where fatigue is already a really big problem, but this is the attendance policy we're dealing with now.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Well, we'll follow up on that. Greg, I appreciate everything you bring to the table. This is Greg Regan, president of the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. And you can check out that Senate testimony, ttd.org is the website. So you take care, and we'll talk to you next month, okay?
Thank you. You too, Flash. Take care.
All right. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, we have the American Federation of Government Employees District 3 and what the Labor Lab is all about. That's tomorrow. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.